We've been eating meat the entirety of our time on this planet as a species. To say otherwise, you better have some compelling evidence, or you just better shut the hell up.
It is Dr. Ken Berry,
the world-renowned carnivore doctor.
A best-selling author of Lies Your Doctor Told Me.
The author of The Proper Human Diet.
Carnivore removes all the foolishness. It's either meat and eggs and seafood, or it ain't. I don't find eating a carnivore diet restrictive. What I did find restrictive was having prediabetes and having severe reflux. You know, being fat, being obese, being severely obese. That's kind of restrictive. Eating saturated fat does not cause belly fat because I lost 4 inches of belly fat in 90 days of carnivore. They say that red meat is a class 2 carcinogen and that processed meat is a class 1 carcinogen. Right off the bat, red meat causes cancer is a foolish argument. When you do stupid things, you pay a stupid price. That's what's happening right now. Is we've got a lot of immature people who are emotionally immature. It hurts my heart when I see a cow harvested. Poor cow, right? But then I grow up and become an adult. It's like, no, I need water, I need air, I need red meat. That's what we've always eaten. Everybody needs to try 90 days of carnivore. You don't have to count macros, you don't have to count calories, you don't have to worry about portion size. Rita, you eat meat like a crazy lioness. And so does Nisha, my wife.
So, if you want to try carnivore for the next 90 days, comment down below. I am in. Are we in, Dr. Berry?
I'm in. Let's do it.
In today's episode, I have the pleasure of having Dr. Ken Berry, and he'll share his expert tips on how to start carnivore the right way and a 90-day carnivore challenge, all to help you get the best results. And speaking about the best carnivore results, I have partnered with Go Carnivore to bring you the world's first free carnivore app. Go Carnivore is like no other. It has 90-day carnivore challenges, a meal planner, live meetings with carnivore doctors, including Dr. Anthony Chafee, Dr. Bright, Professor Bart Kay, and Dr. Kiltz. So many courses and so many more free tools to help you get the best carnivore results. For more information, go to the URL shown on the screen, gocarnivore.com, or there is a clickable link in the description of this video. Dr. Berry, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Good to talk to you again.
In 13 years, you have helped over 100 million people change their lives. And I know that one topic that has changed your life, Dr. Berry, is the carnivore diet. So today, we're going to talk about the ultimate guide for the carnivore diet, how to start, and talk about some dangers that we hear, like heart attack risks and cancer. But before we get into all of that stuff, let's start off with the fun stuff. 10 things that the carnivore diet can do for everybody watching. What is the first thing that the carnivore diet can do for people?
There are so many, it'll be easy to come up with 10. So a carnivore diet, if you're having problems with any of the following things, can help to improve, if not completely correct them, within a few weeks to maybe a year tops. High blood pressure, hypertension, prediabetes, type 2 diabetes, even type 1 diabetes, LADA, MODY. These people very often are told that as long as your hemoglobin A1C is under 7, that's fine. That's absolutely false. The research is very clear that permanent damage is being done anytime your hemoglobin A1C is above 5.6. So anybody with any flavor of diabetes immediately is going to benefit from a carnivore diet. People with metabolic syndrome are going to benefit greatly because metabolic syndrome really should be renamed hyperinsulinemia. And there is no diet on the planet that reverses hyperinsulinemia as quickly as a carnivore diet. Now, keto and ketovore definitely will reverse hyperinsulinemia, but not as quickly as carnivore. People with autoimmune conditions that they consider chronic and progressive, and there's not a thing you can do but take expensive pharmaceutical medications. Many of these get substantially better or go into complete remission on a carnivore diet. Obesity, overweight, severe obesity, all of these things respond immediately to beginning a carnivore diet. And I could go on and on and on the benefits every day. Well, let's talk about mental health. There's actually published research now about keto and carnivore with depression, with OCD, with severe institutionalized schizophrenia. All of these mental health conditions appear to immediately start to become less severe, if not go into complete remission, when starting a very, very low-carb diet. And on the low-carb diet spectrum, as you know, Rena, carnivore is the lowest carbohydrate option.
And what else can we see for people that might not have a certain autoimmune condition or a disease? There is even, you know, skin conditions that can improve as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have YouTube videos about eczema, psoriasis, acanthosis, nigricans, toenail fungus, skin tags. All these things immediately start to become less severe, if not completely improve, on a carnivore diet. There is some component of autoimmune with psoriasis and also chronic inappropriate inflammation from things that you're eating in your diet. And that's why when people with severe psoriasis start a carnivore diet, within weeks, they're already seeing it start to resolve. The lesions are starting to shrink. And very often they wind up with no psoriasis on their body at all, or they'll wind up whereas previously that 50% of their body was covered with psoriasis lesions, now they'll have one nickel-sized lesion on their arm or leg, and that's it. And so the skin improvement, acne, chronic acne, cystic acne, acne vulgaris, all these things immediately start to improve and respond. Hormone-induced acne, the list just goes on and on, because the vast majority of chronic medical disease in modern society is caused by chronic inappropriate inflammation and hyperinsulinemia. And no diet reverses both of those as quickly as a carnivore diet.
So what is it about fatty red meat? Because we're hearing red meat, that's scary. It's not good for you. It's going to increase your cholesterol and all that, you know, things that we hear from many different doctors. What is it about this fatty red meat that is so powerful and healing for all these diseases?
You really have to look at it two different ways. First of all, what's in the fatty red meat? And then secondly, what's not in the fatty red meat? Because both of those things are integral to how a carnivore diet works. And so there's the fatty red meat, if the animal was properly raised and properly fed, contain virtually every nutrient that the human body needs. All the amino acids, definitely. All the fatty acids, definitely. Many of the vitamins and minerals, if the soil that the animal grazed on had those vitamins and minerals in it, then that animal is going to be a literal superfood multivitamin if you include the fats along with the lean meat. And so that's the first part, is that it's one of the most nutrient-dense foods on planet Earth that a human being can eat. Then secondly, what's not in it? There's no added sugar whatsoever. There's no grains whatsoever. There are no vegetable seed oils whatsoever. There are no artificial dyes and colorings and flavorings. There are very often no artificial preservatives. Nothing from the chemical factory is added to the meat. And all of us are somewhat unique in that we react to different things differently. But overall, we're 99.99% the same genetically. And so to say, anybody who says, oh, red meat is not an ancestrally appropriate food for humans, or red meat is inflammatory, or red meat will cause heart disease or type 2 diabetes, it's just foolishness on its face. These people are either ignorant, perhaps innocently ignorant, but yet ignorant nonetheless, or they're trying to sell a line of supplements, which if you go on a plant-based diet, you're going to need a good line of supplements, or they have bought into an ideology and they believe it almost with a religious ferocity that's not based on fact.
What has a carnivore diet done for you personally? Because I know that listening to your story, I was researching you. I was like, wow, I didn't know all the things that you had before you started carnivore. You were really sick, obese. I'll let you tell the story, but tell everybody how your life has changed by starting carnivore.
So during my younger years as a teenager and a 20-something, I was very, very slender. I had an 8-pack without even trying. I had such a low body fat percentage. But then when I got about 35, that changed. I was working full-time in the clinic and also full-time in the emergency department as an emergency department physician, and started to gain weight. And I wore scrubs all the time, so it's got this huge drawstring, so you can't really gauge, you know, the belt line from that. And so when I tried to put on my Sunday pants with a belt, it's like, oh no, that's not happening. And so I thought, well, I maybe should jump on the scale and maybe check some lab work. And so I knew that I was having all of these symptoms and problems. And I thought, well, it's just because I'm getting older. This was in my 30s that I was saying that, right? I'm getting older. Of course, you're going to have some things. Jumped on the scale. I weighed 297 pounds. And when my labs came back, I was pre-diabetic. I had chronic inflammation. My CRP was elevated. My liver enzymes were elevated a little bit, probably had a little fatty liver, had severe daily reflux, severe reflux, had knee arthritis pain, had this ache, that ache, rosacea, toenail fungus, severe dandruff, all these things. And so here I am, supposedly an educated, thoughtful physician, and I was sicker than most of my patients. And I couldn't tolerate that incongruity. And so I started reading about nutrition, initially reading just the mainstream. And I thought, well, I'll try the American Diabetes Association recommended diet and recipes, and did that for 3 months along with jogging 3 days a week, and actually got more pre-diabetic and gained a few more pounds. And so it was at that point I realized there's something, either I'm a special snowflake with special DNA, or there's something about these recommendations is just incorrect. Something about this information that all doctors are giving their patients when they hand them that American Diabetes Association handout and say, here, eat like this. There are errors in that. I got to figure out what they are, because I can't be a fat diabetic doctor in good conscience and then walk into a patient's exam room and say, hey, you're fat and diabetic, you need to do the following things. Well, where I live, people are very common sense oriented. They would just look at me like, dude, what are you talking about? You can't even fix yourself. And so this journey to fix myself started with paleo, primal, low carb-ish, and then keto, and then ketovore, and now carnivore. That's where everything is reversed. Everything is fine. I'm about to celebrate my 55th birthday, and I feel better now at 54, 55 than I felt at 35. At 35, I was saying, well, I'm getting older. You know, you're going to have these things. That's no big deal. Kind of, you know, doing this self-rationalization thing. And now at 55, I could literally go back in time and kick my 35-year-old's ass for cause, but also just because I'm so much more vigorous now, so much stronger, so much leaner, so much smarter than I was at 35. And so I think just that most, and so when my patients from before, when they see me now, they're like, holy crap, what are you doing? And so I think you found this as well. People who knew you before, Raina, that's the probably the biggest selling point for a carnivore diet is when somebody goes carnivore and someone who hasn't seen them for a year or two or three, and they remember the old Raina or the old Dr. Barry, and then they see you now, they're like, oh my God, you look amazing. And it's obvious that you feel amazing. What are you doing? And that's the key moment when you can say, well, I'm on this carnivore diet. You should give it a try.
Let's now talk about the easy way to start the carnivore diet the right way, because we hear different ways of starting high fat, high protein, high and low, this and that. For you, Dr. Barry, and people watching, what is the best way to start the carnivore diet?
So I think the vast majority of people, especially people who have been eating a high carbohydrate, highly processed, standard Western diet for decades, if they switch overnight to carnivore, I don't think it's in any way dangerous, but it can be quite uncomfortable because you've got several things that you're having to contend with, probably the most uncomfortable being carbohydrate addiction withdrawal symptoms. And a lot of people kind of bristle at the idea of sugar addiction or carnivore or carbohydrate addiction, but it's very common and it's very well known. There's multiple studies and both imaging studies and biochemical studies showing that it's very clear that people can become addicted to sugar, especially highly processed carbohydrates, especially. And then for some people, even just the unprocessed carbohydrates that come from eating too much fruit, too much whole wheat, too much of that sort of thing, there are addictive molecules in those things. And you do get a dopamine reward from eating those things. And for many people, if they tried to switch overnight, it would be almost like somebody trying to quit smoking crystal meth overnight. Even though you should do that, it's going to be quite uncomfortable for a few days or a few weeks until your body adjusts, down-regulates all the receptors for the addictive molecules, and upregulates and allows you to make dopamine again while living a normal life and eating a normal human diet, which I consider carnivore to be. And so I think a slow transition. So if anybody's interested in doing World Carnivore Month in January, I think you probably should start December 1, weaning down. First of all, get rid of all the added sugar junk. Get rid of all of the processed grains, wheat, rice, oats, corn, millet, amaranth, quinoa. All that stuff is high in carbohydrates, causes inflammation in the human body. Get rid of all the vegetable seed oils. Don't cook anything in vegetable seed oils. Don't eat anything that has been cooked in vegetable seed oils. Cook in animal fats. And so those are really the first three steps towards adopting a proper human diet, which I consider, I think there's a spectrum, low carb, keto, ketovore, carnivore. Does everybody need to eat a carnivore diet? I don't think so. I think probably everybody needs to try 90 days of carnivore just to see how good you can feel and what the benefits actually are. But I don't think everybody needs to stay there. I think some people can do just fine on a ketogenic diet as long as it's made up of whole, real, one ingredient, keto-friendly foods, not keto cookies and cakes and pies and pancakes. That's foolishness. That's people trying to make money. But real low-carb food, I think it's for many, for maybe 60% of the population, a ketogenic diet is perfect. Ketovore, for some people who have more autoimmune conditions or fatten easier. I fatten and become pre-diabetic very easily. And so, but for me, I love meat. I love eggs. I love seafood. And so carnivore is perfect for me. I just stay there. And while I stay there, all of those chronic medical conditions I used to suffer from daily are gone.
Absolutely. And I wanted to make a point around that low carb spectrum that you talk about, low carb to carnivore. One diet included in that is Atkins. And I was researching recently, Atkins still advocates for vegetable oil. Why do they do that if it's so inflammatory and so bad for our health?
Well, I think Atkins, as you know, it's named after Dr. Robert Atkins, who first popularized a meat heavy low carb diet. But he's passed away now. He fell and hit his head and passed away from a brain bleed. And so the company's been sold. And so the company now is run by a board of directors, just like every other big food company. And they make all their money on selling Atkins shakes and Atkins bars. And in order for a shake or a bar or some kind of snack or some kind of highly processed food to be shelf stable, you got to make it with vegetable seed oil. Because bacteria love animal fats and they'll eat them up. And so it'll go bad quicker. They'll rancy quicker. And so they can't use animal fats making Atkins bars. And that's their biggest profit seller. And so they have to advocate vegetable seed oils. That's one reason. The second reason I think is because the research showing that vegetable seed oils is inflammatory. The research showing that you should avoid them is not as robust yet as the research showing that low-carb diets are the way and that eating lots of fatty red meat is the way. The research is not as robust yet. And so, and I think that's because a lot of the research was funded by the big food companies who use vegetable seed oils. They have to use them in order to make a product that they can put in a plastic wrapper and put in a cardboard box, sit in a warehouse 6 months, then get on a cargo ship and ship it all around the world and sit in a warehouse for another 2 or 3 months and then sit on a grocery shelf for 2 months. The only way you can make that sort of thing, which in my opinion is not real food, it's a food-like substance. The only way you can make that shelf stable is to make it with vegetable seed oils and lots of preservatives and chemical additives. And so they have basically hijacked the research to kind of just the, it's the tobacco company's playbook, basically muddy the water, confuse the topic. Some studies show it's bad. Some show it's good. Some show no difference. As long as there's enough of that kind of contention in the research findings, the general public is just like, well, I don't think anybody knows for sure. This tastes really good, so I'm going to eat this. I think that's why, and there are other people. I mean, if you go to the grocery today, the supermarket, there are many keto products that contain wheat, that contain vegetable oils. They say keto on the front in bold letters. And that's one of the reasons that I want a lot of people to either, you have to be very thoughtful to eat a ketogenic diet or just go carnivore, and that eliminates all the bullshit, right? Because you can't, it's either ribeye or it ain't ribeye. You can't be adding all this stuff you can tell that's not ribeye anymore. And so that's one of the many powers of carnivore diet, is it literally removes all the bullshit. You can't add much to that, or people with eyes to see can go, well, it's obviously not just meat. There's other stuff put in that or on that. So for a lot of people who currently think that keto is, oh, all the cookies, cakes, pies, you know, mug cakes, all the things, that's not keto. That's a keto-like fake food product diet. That's not real food. If you're not eating real food, then that's going to be contributing to chronic disease to at least some degree. And so carnivore removes all the foolishness, removes all of the pitfalls, all the stumbling blocks, because it's either meat and eggs and seafood or it ain't. And the average person can tell the difference. And that's why I love the simplicity and the clarity of a carnivore diet. Plus, for me, I love meat and eggs and seafood, so what's not to love? I also love all of the chronic medical diseases that I no longer have to suffer from because I've adopted this way of eating, and I stick to it very strictly, not religiously, but strictly. Because for me, I don't find eating a carnivore diet restrictive. What I did find restrictive was having prediabetes and having severe reflux and having insomnia and having dandruff, that I had to do this before. Every time I did an interview or talked to a patient, I'd have to do this to get all the dandruff flakes. That's kind of restrictive. Having toenail fungus and not, you know, being able to go barefoot somewhere because my toenails look janky. That was kind of restrictive. Being fat, being obese, being severely obese. That's somewhat restrictive, I found. And so if you say, well, is carnivore too restrictive? I would say compared to what? So a lot of people suffering from chronic medical diseases that they have to take a handful of pills every day for, they find that to be quite restrictive. And many people are happy to trade that severe restriction of chronic disease for the minimal restriction of just eating certain foods. And that's one of the main selling points of a carnivore diet. It's simple. It's straightforward. It's hard to be fooled. And you wind up just eating meat and eggs and seafood and getting healthier. How simple is that?
Very simple. So try it for at least 90 days. The next one is, well, how much should we be eating on a meat-based diet?
So I think any meat is fine. The technical definition of carnivore includes meat from any animal. And I don't advocate eating insects. I don't think anyone should be forced to eat insects, but insects are animals. That's also carnivore. But I think everyone should have their choice whether they choose to include that in their carnivore or not. My choices are fatty cuts of red meat and pastured eggs, always with yolk, and then seafood of some type once or twice a week, just to make sure that I'm getting that iodine and the other micronutrients that occur naturally in ocean living animals that I might not be getting from animals that were grazed on soil that's been improperly treated. And so I think pork is fine for most people. Chicken's fine for most people. Any poultry, any mammal. And you know, the vegans will always say, well, would you eat your family dog? And that's obviously an appeal to emotion. It's not an appeal to fact or logic. And I understand that it hurts their heart. And, you know, back when I was an immature young boy, it hurt my heart too when my dad harvested a deer and brought it home to process it. That hurt my heart when I was 10 or 11 years old. But, you know, I think when you become an adult, you should put away childish things and say, okay, I'm an adult Homo sapiens sapien. The diet that my species has eaten is well known in anthropology and paleoanthropology. This is a proper human diet, that it should include lots of fatty red meat and any other meat that we can get our hands on. That is the diet that we evolved on. That's the diet we've lived on for our entirety on this planet. So it is an absolute true statement to say that Homo sapiens sapiens, that's me and you and everybody else listening to this and who understands English, we have been eating fatty meat for just as many years as we've been breathing air and drinking water. The entirety of our time as a species, we've been doing those three things: eating meat, drinking water, and breathing air. And so it would make just as much sense to say, well, you know, breathing air will cause lung disease, or drinking water will cause kidney disease. It's like, what are you talking about? We've been eating meat the entirety of our time on this planet as a species. It is part of an ancestrally appropriate, proper human diet. To say otherwise, you better have some compelling evidence, or you just better shut the hell up.
That's what I kind of understand when you have these doctors saying, any source of if you have an animal-based diet, if you eat meat in any big quantities, it's going to cause cancer. I'm like, how is that possible?
You know, the World Health Organization, who many people have a little suspicion that their motives may not be what our goals are as just free living humans. They say that red meat is a class 2 carcinogen, and that processed meat is a class 1 carcinogen. But when you actually, and so a lot of people blindly believe that they are peopled with MDs and PhDs who are serious and who have only the best of intentions for humanity. That's a rational assumption, right? I mean, you should be able to trust them, but I think we found that time and time again, we can't trust them. And when it comes to red meat causes cancer, or red meat, processed meat causes cancer, when you actually look at the research that they use to base their opinion on, it's observational research, which by definition cannot prove anything. All it can do is show a possible association. And if you look at the research, the actual studies they cite, the hazard ratio is so small that it's literally background noise. It doesn't prove or show anything. It doesn't even imply a robust correlation, much less a causation. And so right off the bat, red meat causes cancer is a foolish argument. Once you look, literally anybody could do an internet search and read about this for 30 minutes. And on my YouTube videos about red meat and cancer and processed meat and cancer, I've got links to the research. So you can look up those studies and read them. If you don't know what a word means, Google it. Find out what the word means. And after 30 minutes of reading those studies, you'll go, this is a bunch of crap. Dr. Berry's got to be lying. There's got to be more. So you can go to their website and look at their citations. Look them up. It's the same exact kind of research. It's observational, epidemiological. It proves nothing whatsoever, and it only shows the tiniest possible association. And like you intimated earlier, Rena, if red meat in fact did cause cancer, we've been eating red meat for 300,000 years as Homo sapiens sapien for millions of years before we evolved into this species. That seems like that would have, you know, evolution tends to weed things out that are bad for you just through trial and error. Australopithecus robustus was a plant eater. They became extinct because they were this huge primate with these huge skulls and these huge jaw muscles, and they ate grains and grass. They became extinct. And so evolution has a way of weeding out bad decisions. We even joke about this. You know, we give out Darwin Awards for thieves who try to break in somewhere and just hurt themselves more than if they had just stayed home. And it's like, yeah, evolution, that there's a reason we call that the Darwin Award, is because when you do stupid things, you pay a stupid price. And that's what's happening right now, is we've got a lot of immature people who are emotionally immature. They're still like me and you when we were 10 or 11 years old. It hurts my heart when I see a cow harvested. Poor cow, right? But then I grow up and become an adult. It's like, no, I need water. I need air. I need red meat. That's what we've always eaten. And so I think it's a combination of the immaturity, emotional immaturity, and believing a false paradigm, and believing a pipe dream that it's somehow possible to save the planet and also to improve your health by eating this highly processed grain-based diet. And that, it's sad, but so many people have fallen for the fallacies that make up these types of arguments. And the World Health Organization is actually helping those people mislead other people by saying that red meat is a possible carcinogen, when that would be like saying, well, water is a possible carcinogen, or clean air, that's a possible carcinogen. It's just as foolish, it's just as unhelpful, and it's just as misleading as saying that red meat is a possible carcinogen.
Absolutely. So now we know that red meat is not going to cause cancer. We know what meat we should be eating on carnivore for the first 90 days. Dr. Berry, how much should we be eating every day?
Well, you should be eating the same exact amount as every other animal on planet Earth. Nobody goes out into the wild and tells the rhinoceros, look, you need this many grams of protein a day and you need this many. They don't have a degree in nutrition. If they're hungry, they look for food. And when they find food, they eat food, a species appropriate food, until they're full. And then they stop eating. And then they don't eat again until they're hungry. And so when you're eating an ancestrally appropriate, proper human diet, of which carnivore is one, you don't have to do any of that foolishness. You don't have to count macros. You don't have to count calories. You don't have to worry about portion size. I know I've eaten with you at an event before, Rena. You eat meat like a crazy lioness. And so does Nisha, my wife. I mean, you guys don't, you're not like weighing your portions and saying, well, the palm sized portion, you're not doing that. You're eating fatty red meat until you're stuffed, and you both look amazing. And so what I want people to understand is there are principles of biology that apply to animals, to mammals specifically, to primates specifically, to Homo sapiens sapiens specifically. We are a mammal just like every other mammal on Earth. We don't have, if you're eating the highly processed, high carbohydrate, inflammatory standard Western diet, then you damn sure better be worrying about portion control and portion size and calorie counting and all that stuff. And also your macronutrients, because you're probably not going to get enough protein that your body can actually use. But as you put away all that childish foolishness and you say, no, I'm not going to eat frosted flakes anymore. I'm going to have eggs and steak for breakfast, or eggs and bacon for breakfast. Then you get to forget about the macros and the calories and the portion sizes. You get to just, are you hungry? Yes. Therefore, eat this food until you're full. Then stop eating, and then don't eat again until you're full. You get to use basic, hardwired, built-in biological principles like that. Same goes for salt. Oh, does this taste salty enough? Well, no. Well, then put some salt on it. Am I going to put too much salt? Well, does it taste too salty? Well, no, it tastes delicious. Then you didn't put too much salt on it. Just general guidelines like that apply, and you get to just stop worrying about and thinking about your food obsessively. You just sit down and eat till you're full, and then you go outside and play. While everybody else eating the highly processed diet is still counting their calories and their macros, and they've got their little kitchen scales out, none of that stuff is necessary on a carnivore diet. Rena sat down and ate 8 ounces of ribeye and 6 eggs. Did Rena eat too much? Well, did she eat past the point of being full? Well, no, she stopped when she was full. Therefore, she did not eat too much food. Well, should she eat more food? Well, is she still hungry? No, she is full. Therefore, she does not need to eat more food until she's hungry again. It makes things so simple. And I would opine that's how eating should be. It should be a simple, thoughtless act. You don't think about it. You don't measure. You don't weigh. You don't count. No other mammal does that. Why should we do that?
Absolutely. And why is salt so important? Why should we be salting animals, especially in the first 90 days?
Yeah. So salt, first of all, is an essential nutrient that humans and all mammals, I don't know if anybody, if you'll just do an internet search for the goats that climb up the side of a dam or that climb literal mountains, and they're standing in this precarious position that's so dangerous, and they're doing it because there's a specific mineral rock up there that they need to lick to get that salt. That's why they're doing that. And there, any hunter is going to know this, that there are naturally occurring salt licks. There are naturally occurring salty muds and salty rocks that deer will seek out. They'll walk miles because they know where that salt is at. Well, we're a mammal. We do the same thing. We need salt on a daily basis for optimal human health. And so we seek that out. Eating salt to taste, that's what I advocate. I don't think you should be taking salt as a medicine. You should not be taking more salt than your body wants. It's almost like your taste buds are set up to tell you exactly how much salt you need. Now, in the first few weeks of adopting a carnivore diet, you're going to be probably having some carbohydrate withdrawal symptoms. Even if you transitioned slowly, you're still going to have some mild symptoms. Salt and electrolyte tends to help that, right? Also, when you adopt a carnivore diet, your fasting insulin level, which may have been very, very high previously, is going to start to return to normal. And as it does that, this natural process of diuresis is going to start to happen, meaning that you're probably holding anywhere from 5 to 25 pounds of unhealthy water. You're storing that, holding that in your body inappropriately and unhealthily because you used to have hyperinsulinemia. Well, when you lower that fasting insulin, it allows the kidneys to get rid of all that unhealthy water that you were storing. And the way the kidneys are designed, there's going to be salt and electrolytes that go with that urine. And so that's why I really advocate making sure you're getting plenty of salt, especially the first few weeks of adopting a carnivore diet. Make sure you're getting plenty of electrolytes, especially the first few weeks. Making sure you're getting plenty of minerals in the first few weeks, because that's going to help with the transition. It's going to help you when you do have that diuresis, that you're not going to have muscle cramps and all kinds of other problems. And I'll tell you, Brina, there are some carnivores, after they've been carnivore for months and months or a few years, they don't need or use nearly as much salt as they did when they first adopted carnivore, and they seem to be doing great. Whereas other carnivores, I'm one of those. Still, if I don't eat enough salt, I will wind up being kind of down and kind of blah, not feeling great. And so right before I started this interview, I was sucking on my Redmond's Real Salt Rock. And so that literally is like a cup of coffee for me. When I take a pinch of salt or when I lick on a salt rock, within 2 minutes, I'm like, ooh, bam, yeah, okay, I'm ready to roll now. And a lot of people are finding that if they're having a particularly blah day, a pinch of salt, boom, wakes them up and they're ready to go. But then also at the other end of the spectrum, because a lot of people suffer from what they think is insomnia when they go carnivore. And again, it's probably you're not getting enough salt. And so for a lot of people, a big pinch of salt with some water at bedtime, they sleep much better. And so I think that people underestimate how much we need salt. Yes, salt tastes wonderful on meat. Salt tastes amazing. It's delicious. That's not the only motive here. The motive is to get enough salt so that this mammalian body can function optimally. And for some of us, that's more salt. For some of us, that's less salt.
Okay. Well, you mentioned that you have your salt, which is like your cup of coffee. That ties into what can we drink on carnivore?
Yeah. So I think any water, as long as it's pure water, is completely fine on carnivore, whether it's still water or sparkling water. I think that's fine. The carbonating water does not in any way make the water bad for you. I've researched that extensively. There is no research showing that. You don't have to buy high pH water. That's an unnecessary expense. You don't have to do anything. We have a reverse osmosis system under our sink. And so all the water we drink and cook with comes from that. And then we add some mineral drops to it so that it is mimicking the water that we would have drinking 10 or 100,000 years ago, right? Because the water we drank back then was river water, stream water, puddle water. We drank whatever water we found, and it's that all that water was invariably rich in minerals and electrolytes and maybe even some salt, depending on where you got the water from. And so I think it's fine for the vast majority of carnivores to drink black coffee or unsweetened tea. Now, and there are some carnivores, especially people who should really tighten up and do a lion version, which is ruminant meat, salt, and water only. Some people need that at least for a while. Some people seemingly need that for life, especially if they suffer from severe multiple autoimmune conditions. But the vast majority of people do great on a carnivore diet, and they drink coffee, unsweetened tea, sparkling water, or still water. Now, when you start to get into flavored things, right, like, oh, I'm drinking Diet Coke, it's sugar free. Well, yeah, it is, but it has enough sweetener in it that for many of us, especially people who fatten easily or develop diabetes easily, that's enough sweet taste in the mouth. It initiates something called the cephalic phase insulin response. And it'll actually raise your insulin even though you didn't ingest any sugar. And so I would, if someone says, hey, I'm doing carnivore, I stopped drinking regular Coke and Pepsi, now I'm drinking Diet Coke and Pepsi, I would say right off the bat, good. That's a great improvement. But that shouldn't be a permanent part of your carnivore diet. Let's keep weaning that down. Let's start adding a little sparkling water to your Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi, right? And then as weeks go on, let's add more sparkling water and less Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi until you've weaned that sweet taste out of your mouth. And what many people find on a carnivore diet is, you know, before really the only taste that I could really detect was sweet and salty. I couldn't enjoy the subtle flavor of meat or the subtle flavors of eggs. But after a few weeks or a few months on a carnivore diet, suddenly things that you used to think taste delicious, they taste childish and syrupy sweet. And you're like, God, how did I ever like that? I can't understand. There was this thing that Nisha and I both grew up on called SpaghettiOs, which is basically little rings of pasta in sort of tomato sauce. It comes in a can. And we both grew up on that, right? And so a couple of years ago, we found some, I think in her mom's pantry. We're like, let's try this. I wonder if this still tastes as just, oh my God, so good. And we heated it up and tried it. We were both like, this tastes like sugar-sweetened plastic. This is horrible. How did we ever like that? And I think it's because of the maturation of the human palate. When you go back to eating ancestrally appropriate foods, your palate is able to branch out and start to enjoy all the umami and the other subtle flavors. I think when you really are on a strict, proper human diet, you can actually start to taste the mineral content and the salt content and the vitamin content. And your taste buds, which are very, very complex and subtle. I don't think we know everything about the human palate yet. I think there's more to discover. But you start to really enjoy foods that before you would have been grossed out at eating. But then you stop even being able to enjoy highly processed junk food that you used to love. It's fascinating how you can kind of rediscover those ancestral flavors, whereas before you would have been revulsed by.
Absolutely. Now I want to talk about something that many people are worried about when they first start carnivore, especially the first 90 days, their blood work. What do you think, should they be testing their blood work and what should they look for?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's necessary or needed to test your blood work at all if you're eating a proper human diet, because that is by definition a proper human diet. So nothing you're eating is going to cause any lab abnormalities. That's kind of foolish on its face. But many people who are in this space, we love data, don't we? We love to know, and we want to see before and after pictures, and we want to see before and after lab work. So anybody who's thinking, you know, I might do this carnivore challenge, go to your doctor and get a full lab panel checked. And there's a lot of doctors that don't know what a full lab panel is. And I talk about this on a lot of my YouTube videos. I actually wrote a book about this called Common Sense Labs, of which labs to actually ask your doctor for. And the big red flag lab is a fasting insulin level. Most docs don't check that. They don't even know what that is. They either think it's an old lab that nobody checks anymore or a new experimental lab that nobody checks. They're wrong on both counts. This is really the Achilles heel of diet recommendations. If a doctor's not checking a fasting insulin, then they truly have no damn idea what the diet they're recommending is doing to their patients. And so that's one of many labs I recommend. Get it checked before you start carnivore, because for most adults in modern society, they're going to have hyperinsulinemia. Their fasting insulin level is going to be 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, sometimes 100. And when they adopt a proper human diet, in this case, carnivore, it's going to immediately start to return normal, which is going to lower their risk for hundreds of chronic medical conditions. But their doctor didn't even know to check that lab. All their doctor wanted to talk about was their total cholesterol level and their LDL cholesterol. They didn't even know they should be checking that. And so I think, yeah, you should get the full lab panel checked, especially if you're going to be fighting on Twitter with me and Rena and other people fighting the plant-based people on Twitter. you need to get your before labs so that then you can say, look what happened after 90 days of a carnivore diet. Look what happened to my A1C. Look what happened to my fasting insulin. But also look what happened to my CRP. Look what happened to my ESR. Look what happened to my triglycerides. Look what happened to my HDL. Look what happened to my hemoglobin and hematocrit. I was anemic before, and now I'm not. Look what happened to my homocysteine. Look what happened to my ferritin. Look what happened to all these other labs. Look what happened to my AST and ALT. Look what happened to my blood sugar. Look what happened to my creatinine. I had stage 1 or 2 chronic kidney disease before. Now, after 90 days carnivore, my kidney labs are back to normal, even though one of the myths you hear is that too much animal protein is bad for your kidneys. How did my creatinine improve and my EGFR improve if eating lots of fatty red meat's bad for my kidneys? That seems backwards, doesn't it? And so I think actually that's going to be the proof that just tips a lot of people over to saying, yeah, I believe that a plant-based diet is ethical and moral and all this, but obviously a carnivore diet improves people's individual health. And so I think that how can you even advocate for, oh, let's have a healthier planet if you yourself are unhealthy? I think protecting the planet and healing the planet, I think it starts at home with fixing your own health first. And then that's going to give you the stamina and the mental awareness to say, okay, now what's the next step in healing the planet? Well, maybe it's healing my family and my friends. Maybe that's the next logical step. And then once you've got that sorted, then you can say, well, what about my local community? Maybe I could give a free talk at the library, or maybe I could write a letter to the editor. Maybe I could start a Facebook page for my friends. And I think that ripple effect of healing yourself, then taking care of your friends and family, then your local community, I think that's how we're going to heal the world and protect the world and make the world a better place, not by donating to some World Health Organization that's going to do God knows what with the money. If you want to make the world a better place and a healthier place, you need to fix your own health. And you do that by spending your money on meat, good quality meat, the best quality meats you can afford, the best quality eggs you can afford, the best quality seafood you can afford. Then you pay that forward by helping your friends and family. Then you pay that forward by helping your community. And if we've got, you know, we've got millions of carnivores around the world already. And as millions more come on with World Carnivore Month, if everybody's following that model of fix myself, then fix my friends and family, then fix my community, imagine the power of that. That's unstoppable. You can't regulate that because it's just these little individual nodes of people all over the world in every single country, in every single zip code and time zone saying, I'm going to fix my health because that's my ultimate responsibility, right? How can I be advocating for a healthy planet if I'm not healthy? That doesn't even make any good sense. Or if I'm advocating eating a diet that leads directly to type 2 diabetes and hyperinsulinemia, how am I saving the world? How does that even make sense? It's not logical, but it also doesn't even make damn common sense. Oh, you're advocating a diet that's literally going to make everybody on the planet hyperinsulinemic and inflamed, but you want to heal the earth? What? Come on. And so I think the carnivore diet and just the carnivore mindset, that's the way we're going to protect the earth and heal the earth. And we're going to do it one person at a time.
So if you follow Dr. Berry's guidelines, I think that was about 10 things. So 10 ways to easily start. If you do those 10 things, it will be so easy for you and you'll pass those 90 days. What should they do after those 90 days?
Well, I think the carnivore diet really is the ultimate elimination diet. And a lot of people say that's all it is. And I'm like, yeah, it is an elimination diet, but that's not all it is. And so at the end of that 90 days, then people can choose, because what they're going to find is they're not nearly as attracted to previous junk food. It's much easier to just say, you know, I'm never going to eat that crap again. And that's what I find uniformly is after 90 days of doing carnivore, people are like, I might stray occasionally with, you know, some keto friendly vegetables or nuts or berries or some kind of food that's a one ingredient food, but I'm never going to eat that the shit that's made by Kellogg's or Kraft or General Mills or Kraft Heinz or Mondelez. I'm never going to eat that crap again. That's just never going to happen because I now honor my body. I realize the benefit of eating real food now. I'm never going to eat that junk. But I think it's fine if people are like, yeah, I like carnivore, but I do miss Brussels sprouts or cashews or blueberries, whatever. And so I think that it's great to retry some of those keto-friendly foods, some of those ketovore foods. But remember, you've been on an elimination diet for 90 days. So if you suddenly get bloating from those cashews or from those Brussels sprouts, or your joints start to ache or your skin flares up, that's your body saying, hey, you didn't realize it before because you were eating all this inflammatory crap. But now that you're eating so clean and so ancestrally appropriate, your immune system has calmed down. It's not confused and overworked, right? And your insulin levels are back to low normal again. When you do eat something that causes inflammation, your body's able to give you an immediate signal, immediate feedback. Nope, you shouldn't be eating that. Then you can mark that on your list like, okay, gotcha. And what some people find is to be inflammation free and have a very healthy insulin and A1C, they need to stay carnivore. I'm one of those people. Every now and then for my anniversary or birthday, which is coming up, I'll probably stray a little bit with some keto foods. But if I stray too far, immediately my right knee and my right shoulder let me know that I strayed a little bit too far from my version of a proper human diet. And so I'm going to get right back on that because I love being a very active husband and father and grandfather and community member. I love going out in the yard and playing with the kids. I love being active on the farm. I'm not going to let some food restrict me from being able to do the physical activities that I love to do. I'm never going to allow that. And so that's the beauty of carnivore is it's so nutrient dense. It's so ancestrally appropriate, but it's also a great elimination diet. And so that's going to give people a heads up, should you be eating that or not? And so a lot of people will, at the end of the challenge, they'll branch back out. But I don't think many people will go back to eating the offerings of Pepsi and Coca-Cola and Kellogg's. They're just not going to fall for that bullshit anymore. But they might try some other seemingly ancestrally appropriate foods, and they'll get immediate feedback from their body if that's truly an ancestrally appropriate food for them or not.
Let's move on now to carnivore diet dangers, things that we hear, the fight that we have to fight that we hear every day, all this crap. The first one, too much meat will increase your blood glucose.
Yeah, and this is just ridiculous on its face. Anybody that understands even the basic principles of human physiology, of human nutrition, know that the highly processed carbohydrates and pure sugar, that's what's going to spike your blood sugar the most. That's also what's going to spike your fasting insulin level the most. That's not even debatable. And so the poor vegans whose argument is that red meat causes type 2 diabetes, I really feel sorry for them because that's such a hard row to hoe. Nobody's going to believe that if they understand even just the simplest principles of biology, they're going to be like, that don't even make good sense, dude. What are you talking about? And their argument, if you look into it, they go into more detail, is also just foolishness on its face. So I think the average person's going to quickly see past, oh, red meat raises your blood sugar. That's complete foolishness. It's what you were eating with the red meat. It was the fries and the bun and the sugar-laden ketchup and the Coca-Cola you drank with your tiny little piece of meat, that's what raised your blood sugar. So red meat absolutely doesn't raise your blood sugar to any meaningful degree. It absolutely does not contribute to prediabetes or type 2 diabetes or metabolic syndrome or hyperinsulinemia. It just does not do those things.
You say here in a different video, berberine has a 5% effect.
So berberine's a lot like glucophage or metformin, right? They're essentially the same molecule. And people don't realize, they see all of the type 2 diabetes medications advertised on television and they think, man, they must really, really work. They must do a lot. They're spending all these millions of dollars. And what they don't understand is that most of the type 2 diabetes medications will lower your A1C by 2 or 3 percentage points. Like it's literally, it'll lower your A1C from 6.7 to 6.2. or something like that. It's like, okay, that's good, but that's not great. What I want to do is completely reverse my type 2 diabetes. And none of the FDA-approved medications will do that. Berberine won't do that unless you're also eating a proper human diet. And so if you're eating carnivore, you don't need any of the medications for type 2 diabetes. You also don't need berberine. Now, a lot of people take berberine or metformin or glucophage as they're adopting it because they feel like I really should be doing something for my blood sugar, right? Because I'm type 2 diabetic. But what they don't realize is that a carnivore diet is going to completely reverse their type 2 diabetes within 3 to 6 months, 12 months max. It's going to be gone. So not only are you going to have that decrease from 6.7 to 6.4, it's just going to keep going down. And I want everybody, if you're type 2 diabetic and you adopt a carnivore diet, I want you to recheck your A1C and fasting insulin every 3 months so that's going to immediately pull back the curtain on all the bullshit. Because if you're eating carnivore, they're going to come down every 3 months. They're going to come down noticeably and substantially. Every 3 months you check them until they're both back to stone cold healthy normal. And that's never going to happen. You could be taking 7 of the different FDA approved medications for type 2 diabetes. You're never going to get a normal A1C until you adopt a proper human diet, which then obviates all of the prescription medication. You don't need them all. You don't need any of them because the diet's going to fix your A1C and your fasting insulin. If you stay on it strictly enough for long enough, you will no longer have type 2 diabetes.
Wonderful. Okay, next one is red meat causes heart disease. You mentioned the cancer one, but it causes heart disease and stroke.
Yeah. Again, there's no randomized controlled trials or even controlled trials in humans showing this to be true. There is some observational epidemiological data that shows a possible weak association between red meat and heart disease or red meat and stroke. It doesn't prove anything. And so anytime you make a claim, oh, red meat causes heart disease, that's a claim. Okay. Now, then we have to think about, okay, human beings have been eating lots of red meat since we've been on this planet for 300,000 years. So that is a strong claim. That's a claim that demands meaningful, strong evidence to even take it seriously. Right? Not only to not believe it, but just to even take it seriously and discuss it, you need to have compelling evidence that that may be true. But the evidence they come with is observational data, observational research that has a hazard ratio of 1.4, which if you know anything about statistics, you're like, that's less than background noise. That's not even background noise. That's literally nothing. That's meaningless. Because the observational research that we used to basically show that smoking cigarettes is bad for you had a hazard ratio of 15 or 20 or 25 or even 30. Very strong signal. Still didn't prove that smoking caused cancer, but it was very worrisome, right? And so instead of these observational studies trying to show that red meat causes heart disease having a hazard ratio of 10 or 20 or 30, they've got a hazard ratio of 1.4. And for those of you who don't know much about statistics, a hazard ratio of 1 means there's literally no effect whatsoever. And so a 1.4 versus a 15 or a 20 with smoking cigarettes. So most statisticians consider any hazard ratio of less than 2 to be literally background noise, like putting your radio in between stations and just the static. It's meaningless. It doesn't mean anything. But yet they're trying to scare us with a hazard ratio of 1.4. That's all the research they have. That's literally it. They don't have anything else. And so until they come up with some compelling evidence that red meat leads to heart disease or leads to increased risk of stroke, it's their ideology bleeding into their research results. They believe in a plant-based diet. They believe it's best for themselves and best for Mother Earth. And they're trying to get you to believe that too. But the evidence that they're trying to use to convince you is foolishness.
What about when people go on carnivore? And I've had this a lot in my carnivore group. They say, why is my triglycerides increasing?
Yeah, and this happens temporarily in some people. The vast majority that adopt a carnivore diet, their triglycerides plummet back to levels lower than they've ever seen in their entire life of having their blood checked. They've never seen triglycerides that low. But there are some few people who either have a genetic predisposition or they've misunderstood a carnivore diet. They think a carnivore diet includes lots of fruit and honey. That'll keep your triglycerides very, very high. And so I'm talking about 90% of people, 95% of people who adopt a carnivore diet, their triglycerides are going to go from 200, 300, 400 or higher back down to under 100. That's what the vast majority of carnivores see with their triglycerides. About 1% of people have a genetic issue that makes them have hypertriglyceridemia. And so they'll still have triglycerides. Some very few people drinking coffee and tea seems to raise their triglycerides. This is not true for the vast majority of people. Other people don't know because their doctors misled them. They don't know that they should fast for 12 to 14 hours before having their blood work drawn. Because there's a lot of doctors out there now that literally tell people, you don't have to fast for blood work anymore. That's, you used to have to do that, but you don't have to do that anymore. And when it comes to your blood sugar and your fasting insulin and your triglycerides, it's mandatory that you fast for 12 to 14 hours before you have your blood work checked. And for most people, if they don't drink coffee the morning of the study and they fast for at least 12, but not more than 14 hours before the labs, and they're eating a strict carnivore diet, their triglycerides are the best number they've seen in years, sometimes even decades.
Okay, saturated fats coming from fatty red meat and sodium can cause belly fat and visceral fat.
Yeah. So we know definitively what macronutrients that all mammals on the planet eat in the late summer and fall in order to get fat for the winter. It's actually advantageous if you're living in the wild to gain a few pounds of fat going into the winter. That decreases the risk that you will starve to death. And what mammals in the wild invariably eat is carbohydrates to gain that weight. They don't eat fatty red meat to gain that weight. Even bears that are omnivorous, they'll focus on berries and fruit so that they can gain lots of fat. So when they hibernate over the winter, they won't starve to death. Many, many mammals do the same thing. I would opine that humans did this same thing when we lived in a different kind of wild, because this is our wild now. We've kind of curated our wild to make it what we want it to be. But humans who still live in the wild, if they're trying to put on fat around their visceral fat, around the belly, they eat fruit, they eat honey, they eat lots of berries, they eat lots of carbohydrates, lots of starchy tubers. That's how you put on weight around the middle. I think the best argument for this is anybody who has a problem with visceral fat, belly fat, fat around the middle, do the 90-day carnivore challenge. Measure, take all your measurements, your waist measurement, your belly measurement, your bust, your shoulders, your arms, your legs. Write those down. Then after 90 days of strict carnivore, measure again. And never again will you believe the lie that eating saturated fat causes belly fat. You'd be like, that sure didn't happen for me. I lost 4 inches off my waist in 90 days. So you can't. And so I think that's one of the great things about checking your labs and doing your body measurements is when somebody who you perhaps respect and believe, maybe a doctor, maybe an influencer online, when they say something, you got the black and white. You saw your A1C before carnivore and your A1C after. You're like, no. Red meat doesn't cause diabetes. It literally reversed mine. I've got the black and white proof. Or no, eating saturated fat does not cause belly fat because I lost 4 inches of belly fat in 90 days of carnivore. And so it helps bulletproof people against false assumptions and false beliefs that come from people that we might look up to, we might respect. And because those people are also well-intentioned. That's one thing I want everybody to understand. Those plant-based influencers and gurus and doctors, they believe they're correct. They believe it in their heart of hearts. They're not trying to trick you. They're not trying to mislead you. They believe that. They're just wrong. And the way you bulletproof yourself from that is that you check your labs before and after. You check your measurements before and after. You check your mental health before and after. You check your levels of inflammation before and after. And then when that person who you still respect and believe in says something, you're like, well, that's not what happens in my body because I've got the black and white evidence.
Okay, last one. Red meat, bacon and butter, oh, it's high in calories. You're just going to get fat from eating all this stuff. How can that happen?
Many people still believe in the calorie in, calorie out model. Even though Weight Watchers, who they are the reason that this model is so ubiquitous and so popular. They popularized this. Weight Watchers has been in business since the late 1960s, and they've been helping people lose weight all those decades. And so if Weight Watchers, if calorie counting actually worked and calories in, calories out, move more, eat less, if that actually worked, we wouldn't have any fat people. But we have a veritable obesity epidemic all over the world. And anywhere people are eating the modern diet, there's an obesity epidemic. Even though the calories are plainly printed on every package and people are trying to cut their calories and trying to do all that stuff, what it amounts to is a semi-starvation diet. And you cannot starve a mammal forever. That is impossible. We are hardwired to fight against being starved, right? And so that's why if you lock an animal in a cage and don't feed them enough, at their first opportunity, they'll break out of the cage and go eat until they're full, which is what they're programmed to do. And so Weight Watchers now, they believe so much in the calories in, calories out model that they've now bought a company that can prescribe Ozempic. That's how good the Weight Watchers model works. It doesn't. And they basically, a few years back, the CEO at that time of Weight Watchers, somebody asked her, when are you going to have a keto version on Weight Watchers? And she said, we're never going to have that. And there's a specific reason why they can never have that, because if they had a keto option, then more people would lose weight and they would keep it off. But that would reveal that their calorie in, calorie out model is completely erroneous, right? But buying a company that can prescribe Ozempic online, they can still say, well, you take Ozempic, you're eating fewer calories. You're just eating less total food because it's mucking around with your hunger hormones and satiety hormones. And so I think Weight Watchers is the ultimate example of how calories in, that calories out doesn't work. How many people have signed up and joined Weight Watchers 40 times? They lose 20 pounds. And then they get tired of starving themselves and they start eating until they're full again, but eating wrong foods that Weight Watchers recommends. And then they're fat again. They gained it all back plus 5 more pounds. How many times have we seen Oprah Winfrey do that over the course of her career, right? I mean, it's glaringly obvious that you cannot starve someone, even someone as disciplined as Oprah Winfrey. She can't even semi-starve herself forever. And I mean, she's a very successful person, very self-conscious, self-aware. I'm sure she has amazing self-discipline and self-control. She can't even do it. So what makes you think you can do it? Stop worrying about calories. Eat fatty red meat and eggs with the yolk until you're comfortably stuffed. Then stop eating. Go outside and play. Have fun. And then when you get truly hungry again, come back inside and eat more fatty red meat and eggs with the yolk and a little bit of seafood. That's literally the secret to human health, human vitality, human longevity. I think last time I checked, there are over 400 studies right now on clinicaltrials.gov studying a ketogenic diet, which carnivore is effectively a subset of a ketogenic diet, correct? More and more research is coming out every day. There's going to be a research study that'll probably already be out when this airs, that you can eat 12 Oreo cookies a day and lower your LDL cholesterol more than if you're taking Zocor or Lipitor or Crestor. And everybody on the planet knows that Oreo cookies are terrible for your health. So how in the world are Oreo cookies lowering your risk of heart disease? But they're freaking Oreo cookies. We know that they're unhealthy. And so all this research is coming out, just poking large, glaring holes in the calorie in, calorie out model, in the, oh, saturated fat causes heart disease, oh, red meat causes heart disease. Every day there's going to be a new research study coming out that was done properly that's going to just jab a huge glaring hole in those paradigms, in those models. And I think we're very near a tipping point now, Rena. And maybe this carnivore month, January of 2024, this may be the tipping point where enough people try carnivore for 90 days to just say enough of the foolishness. We don't believe in a plant-based model anymore. We don't believe in calories in, calories out. We don't believe red meat is bad for us. Because once enough people say that, it'll just catch on like wildfire, and it will become the proper human diet again for the majority of people on this planet. And all the plant-based people will have to find a new job because nobody will be buying their bullshit anymore.
So imagine you have a person that is watching you, have watched the last hour and 10 minutes. They're thinking, okay, you know what? I've been doing carnivore, but not that strict. Or I want to try carnivore. What is the last few words that you would tell them to try carnivore?
There is no proof that eating fatty red meat is bad for you. There's not a shred of proof on the planet. Number one. Number two, we know, if we've read much in anthropology and paleoanthropology, that that is the diet that we ate the most of as we evolved into the apex species that we are today. We effectively rule the planet because of this big brain and because of the way we're able to use it. This brain evolved from eating fat. It evolved from eating bone marrow and the brains of other mammals and all the fat that we could get our hands on. That's how we evolved into what we are now. And so for somebody to say, oh, well, that may be true, but now we should eat a low-fat plant-based diet, that's foolishness on its face. Once you really start to think about this and try to discern the truth, you're like, there's no way that can be right. And so red meat is not bad for you. Red meat is actually a nutrient-dense, ancestrally appropriate superfood, especially if the animal it came from was grazed on soil that has been treated properly and if the animal was fed properly. Absolutely, if you can afford grass-finished beef and pastured eggs and properly raised animals, spend your money on that because it is 5 to 10% better than the improperly raised factory farm animals. And also it's treated much more humanely, which I'm for. But right now we've got to feed billions of people. And so we're going to have to keep using the CAFO model for as long as it takes for people like me, I've got 60 sheep in the pasture right now, and I'm planning on scaling that up. When enough of us have scaled up our local farms and our ranches, we won't need the factory farming model and the factory feeding of animals and the inhumane treatment of animals anymore to feed humans. And so I would implore everybody, try it for 90 days. You've probably tried the plant-based challenge already years back. You probably have tried Weight Watchers. You've probably tried Jenny Craig. You've probably tried all the other foolish things that the gurus recommend. Let this be your last trial. Try 90 days of carnivore, and I promise you, all your questions will be answered at the end of that 90 days. You'll be like, ah, now I understand. Now I understand human physiology and human nutrition. I understand why all those arguments that I fell for in the past, I can see through them now. They're foolishness now, because now I've got the answer that my own body gave me because I fed it ancestrally appropriate food for 90 days and I did not feed it any of the slow poisons that the big food companies would like to sell to me.
So if you want to try carnivore for the next 90 days, comment down below. I am in. Are we in, Dr. Berry?
I'm in. Let's do it.
So comment that you're in, that you're going to do the challenge, because we want people to just to try it and get their better health. But Dr. Berry, as always, thank you so much. You're always a pleasure, always a wealth of information. How can people find you?
So I've got a little YouTube channel. I've got over 1,000 videos, I think, now about a proper human diet and about other medical topics, medications, skin conditions, metabolic conditions, all kinds of topics that a family doctor would talk about. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I've got 3 books now, Lies My Doctor Told Me, which some of your viewers may have heard of. I also have a book called Kicking Ass After 50, since I'm over 50. And I still want to keep kicking ass for a long time. I wrote that book with my good friend Zane Griggs. And then I have a book called Common Sense Labs that I wrote with my good friend Kim Howerton, who was misdiagnosed. She had hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's, and she suffered from it for 20 years before 12 different doctors she had seen finally figured out what was wrong with her. If she had had this book, Common Sense Labs, she would have been diagnosed immediately and treated properly. And there are so many people out there suffering from either missed diagnoses or misdiagnosis. And it's because their doctors don't know which labs to order or why to order them or how to interpret them. This book will help you as a patient help your doctor know which labs to order, why to order them, and what the results actually mean. All those are available on Amazon. And if you ever want to see snarky Dr. Berry, I'll be over on Twitter with Rena fighting the plant-based people.
I hope you enjoy this interview with Dr. Berry. Now, you need to watch this video next with Laura Spath. She's going to talk about how she did carnivore wrong and what you need to do instead. I'll see you guys next week.